You're about to hear the Sunday sermon from the Grapevine Church of Christ in Grapevine, Texas, a family who's devoted to giving our lives to and living our lives for Jesus Christ. If you have any questions about today's lesson, visit us on our website, www.grapevinechurch.com. Thanks for listening.
Marco. That was completely set up. Marco, what's the next response? Polo. A game many of us may be all too familiar with, and a game that will be played many times in pools this summer. A game where one person is attempting to make out a voice, any voice, so they are no longer it. We tirelessly call out, hoping one person is close enough for us to catch. And if it doesn't happen quick enough, then frustration sets in for the one who's calling Marco. And frustration can set in rather quickly with this game. We hear a voice moving toward, only to find out that that voice is no longer there. We have in our minds the person that we want to catch, and so we try to make out their voice, only to, when we tag that person, come to find out it's not the person we thought it was. Then when desperation really sets in, we will go after anybody and everybody, maybe even cheating just a little bit. You know what I mean when I say cheating. If you've ever played Marco Polo, you'll crack that eye open just a bit to see who's in front of you so that you can go after them. Because really the point of the game is to not be it. And it's hard enough having multiple people calling out to you to know very well that some of them are cheating. You know some of them are not calling out when you say Marco. You also know that some of them have decided to just get out of the pool altogether. And so all of this building to this desperation, and all bets are off. Hands start flailing. Water is flying everywhere as you look for that one person to get. We are in a mode of desperation trying to find the right person to get, to try to not be it anymore so that we can be on the other side. We know this feeling of desperation. I think it's a behavior we all understand. All of us have had the power of desperation in our lives, the desperation of searching for that which we have lost. We're standing in the grocery store looking at the aisle, looking at what's in the shelves, only to look down and realize that our kids aren't next to us. So the adrenaline begins to rush, and we begin to look down each aisle trying to find our child, only to realize when we find them that you told them to stay in that spot. We understand the desperation of loved ones trying to find a solution to pains in life. My mother is working through this right now with my dad. You can hear it in her voice, in the tired, breaking voice of someone who's at the end of their rope. It's not quite helplessness, but it's almost to that point. You don't know what to do next because options seem limited. Moments when we're willing to listen to any voice. Moments when we will grab the surprised person next to us and bring them into the situation, hoping they can answer the questions that we need answered. Moments when we reach out for who we think is the right person to solve the problem. Only to find out when we reach for that person, when we open our eyes, we find out it's the wrong person, and we leave disappointed. And when desperation sets in, a thirst sets in. It's that kind of thirst that you're almost to the point of cotton mouth. I had this feeling on Monday. I'm sorry, I'm looking at Blair and I'm about to laugh when I say this, but I had this feeling on Monday when I was working out. Because as Blair says, and he's right, if you ever want to know someone who does CrossFit, don't worry, they'll tell you. But I was working out on Monday, And I normally work out in the mornings during the week just because it's cooler and it's easier. So I get up in the mornings and I go work out. Well, on Mondays, I can't do that anymore because of life situations. Namely, we decided to have a baby. And so I can't do that. So I got to go at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon now on Mondays to work out. Well, this last Monday was kind of the first Monday that I was going to try this out. And, you know, it was also the first Monday that it decided to be 91 degrees. And we work out in basically a tin box with fans. There's no air conditioner or anything like that. There's just those blowing, rotating fans that just circulate hot air through the room. And so we started doing a workout, and there came a point in the middle of the workout when it felt as if I couldn't breathe because it felt as if someone had just taken ashes and dumped it down my throat. I could not breathe because it hurt. I could not breathe because I was as thirsty as I have ever been that I can remember. And so what did I do? In the middle of the workout, I grabbed whatever bottle I could find. Now, if you have an affinity against germs, this would have freaked you out. Because I just found a bottle sitting right next to me that had, and the bad part was it had just a very little bit of water, that bottom part of the water in the bottle. Yeah. I didn't care. But I grabbed that bottle and just dumped it down my throat because that's what I needed at that moment to get rid of that thirst that I had. The people of God understood that kind of thirst all too well. They have been desperately searching for the moment of the redeemed nation, searching for the one person, the Messiah, who would lead them back to their remembered moment of greatness, the person who would fulfill their hopes and dreams as an individual and as a nation. Israel knew what it meant to cry Marco out loud. They also knew what it was like to hear hundreds of voices shouting Polo back at them. Desperation had set in for these people. Their thirst was becoming unbearable. They found themselves reaching out and grabbing on anyone's message that resonated with theirs. Israel needed a shepherd. They were desperate for a shepherd, someone who could point them in the right direction. They were looking for a message. They were looking for a vision of life. But the message they were looking for spoke this way. It spoke of power. It spoke of prestige. It spoke of nation building. And it spoke of exclusion. These were the ideologies that would resonate with them when they heard it. This was their vision of flourishing, they believed. They were set out to become this again. And this was the message that they were listening to and trying to hope to find in their shepherds. Because that was the message they could get behind. But the prophet in Ezekiel 34 has a completely different idea of what the shepherd looks like. In Ezekiel 34, verses 11 through 16, it says this, For thus says the Lord God, I myself will search for my sheep and will seek them out. As shepherds seek out their flocks when they are among their scattered sheep, so I will seek out my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places to which they have been scattered on a day of clouds and thick darkness. I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and bring them back into their own land. And I will feed them on the mountains of Israel, by the watercourses and in all the inhabited parts of the land. I will feed them with good pasture, and the moments and the mountain heights of Israel shall be their pasture. There they shall lie down in good grazing land, and they shall feed on rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I will make them lie down, says the Lord God. I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured, and I will strengthen the weak. But the fat and the strong I will destroy. I will feed them with justice. God, the good shepherd, rescues sheep from the places that have been scattered, feeding them, tending to the weak, the injured, and the lost. The good shepherd who is what Israel has been desperately waiting on. It is the shepherd who will show Israel the way forward. Israel has been waiting for this one who will guide them. But notice the language of the prophet. The good shepherd will bring peace, mercy, and redemption. The shepherd who comes embodying the language of the prophet will be the one to ease Israel's pain. Israel's thirst will be quenched and their searching ended. Because Israel is trying to end their desperation. But Israel's trying to end their desperation with the power that can overturn an enemy. Israel is hoping and looking for a shepherd to lead them to victory on the field of battle. The shepherd will once again set up the boundaries of Israel, allowing them to prosper in strength, to gain notoriety, and to be wealthy one more time. So the people of Israel will know the voice of the shepherd when it sounds like this. It will be powerful. It will be kingly. And it will be bold. But that's a different language than what the prophet has envisioned. It's a different imagination than what the prophet stirs in Ezekiel 34. But in a lot of ways, I think this is what we're all kind of looking for. This life that we're in is incredibly complicated with its ins and outs. We are doing the best we can to figure it out. Most of us have a pretty good idea of what it would take, but we all need someone to follow from time to time. Are we not all looking for people who seem to have it all together? Who give us a vision of what this good life is in the world? I mean, I think so. I think we all are attempting to look for these kind of people in our lives. I know I've been guilty of it. I've been guilty of looking for mentors, people who I think I want to be like someday. Whatever vision is in my head of what it means to live the good life directs me towards that certain kind of person. Because we think that that person holds within their minds and in their life a secret to life. And when we think we found it, we follow it. And that's when it really gets difficult. Because when we think we found what we've been looking for in someone, we have to follow them. When we see people who have life figured out, then we begin to think to ourselves, maybe this is the one. This is the one whose life I need to be like. Honestly, have you never thought to yourself when you saw somebody else, I really wish I had their life. I really wish I could be like them. It could be the person who has all the money to buy anything they want, or the person whose kids are perfectly behaved. Maybe it's the person who never has had a bad day or always seems to have the best luck at work. You know, those people who just seem to have a charmed life. And when we think about it, we can go to Amazon and see all the self-help books, all the 10 steps to make you better, all the get rich quick. We can see all of that on Amazon, and we can understand why people immediately jump to those kind of things. They immediately jump on board with those kind of people because we are desperately searching for that one shepherd to quench our thirst. And so we honestly have a lot more in common with the Pharisees, the teachers of law, and the people of Israel than we do anybody else. We're all searching for the good shepherd. And the Good Shepherd may go by a lot of different names. As a congregation, we may have an idea of who the Good Shepherd is, but sometimes I think the shepherd matches our own opinions than the reality we read in Scripture. We want our shepherd to be strong. We want our shepherd to be mighty. We want our shepherd to be bold, powerful, and kingly. We want our shepherd to meet our desperation and say, "Be like me and you will never have a bad day." And for the most part, we buy what those shepherds are selling. They make us feel powerful. They make us look powerful, and they can make us sound convincing. But then we come to the text of John 10, and another guy enters the scene. This guy shows up, and he doesn't look like much. We know who he is because we've memorized his words. Israel knows who he is because he's been healing the sick. He's been bringing sight to the blind. He's been eating with sinners. But his words and actions don't match up with the perceived ideas of what the good life really is. Sure, we say we want to follow him, but when we really read his words, they're kind of difficult. When we really see his actions, he really means it. But yet, we see there are still people following this guy. But when we notice who's following him, what do we notice about the people? They're a little bit unclean. There's tax collectors with them, or IRS agents. There's prostitutes. There's carpenters. There's refugees. And there's immigrants. There's people who don't look like us. They don't talk like us. And they don't smell like us. But they seem to be following him. And then John writes Jesus' words. And this is what Jesus says. "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the good shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." Jesus says he is the good shepherd. He is the fulfillment of Ezekiel's promise by God. Your desperate thirst has come, but not in the shape of who you were thinking. Jesus reveals in this I am statement both the nature of God and his identity. The good shepherd offers something different than what other shepherds offer in life. The good shepherd tells a different story than the other shepherds tell. We know his voice by not how loud he is or how well put his life is. Instead, we know his voice because his voice cuts through the visions of the good life that the world has created. His voice brings those on the margins into the fold. It rescues and offers peace to those we think don't deserve it. The good shepherd shows us the good life in a different way, not by how much we can accumulate or how powerful we are over another. Instead, the good shepherd shows us the good life through service, self-giving love, and even death for the other. We know the good shepherd's voice because the good shepherd walks into the dark and lonely places of the heart. And you know those places I'm talking about. These are the places we're looking to fill with words and actions of other shepherds. But every time we try to fill that hole, we realize the hole gets bigger. Jesus comes and asks a pointed question, I think, for all of us. Have we been following the voice of the shepherd? Has our life imitated the life of the good shepherd? You see, Jesus doesn't tell us to close our eyes and cry, Marco. He tells us to open our eyes and say, Jesus. Open our eyes and our ears to see the good shepherd in action in our lives and the lives of others. Open our eyes and see the action of the good shepherd in our lives and the lives of others. Jesus says, I've come to give life. Not life as the world tells it or as other shepherds espouse to, but the life that offers hope to the world. The voice is familiar because it is the one voice that has the power to ease our desperation and quench the thirst of what we've been searching for. This voice is familiar because it is not the loudest voice, but it is the one in the quiet whisper. It's the voice that causes us to open our eyes instead of shutting them and wildly flinging into the air, hoping we catch someone. The Good Shepherd brings the weak, the marginalized, the oppressed, the forgotten, and the God-forsaken into the community. It does not separate, exclude, or build walls to keep others out. The Good Shepherd goes beyond the wall, into the lonely places where most would dare not go. The voice of the shepherd will not bring only a particular kind of person here. The voice of the Good Shepherd will not bring only a particular kind of dream. The Good Shepherd's voice fulfills the dreams of all people. No, the voice of the shepherd calls. Close your eyes and imagine the one person that you cannot imagine the good shepherd would call. The good shepherd calls, and I'm going to tell you, yes, even that person. And don't think that the way of life that Jesus is talking about here is just for a certain group of people. But to know the good shepherd's voice is to be the good shepherd to the world. It's to be a congregation that takes on the identity of the good shepherd. And so as we end, I ask this, what are you searching for? What shepherd are you following? And on a congregational question, ask Grapevine, what shepherd are we following? Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Those who know my voice will follow me. He tells a different story than the one that a lot of other shepherds tell in this world. As we think about it, what shepherd are you following today?
You've been listening to Grapevine Church of Christ. Subscribe to the Sermon Podcast and to our other Grapevine Church podcast to hear special behind-the-scenes content. For more information, visit our website, www.grapevinechurch.com.